It's time to start planning our waivers for the big double game week 34. But are the fixtures for the doublers all they're cracked up to be? Or should we be considering some single game week players instead? We'll be discussing that next, as well as all the usual stuff, including feature picks, hidden gems, most hidden gem pick, and a couple of big names on the get rid list. So let's get straight into it. Welcome back to episode 170 of the Draft FC podcast. Welcome back to the Draft FC podcast, the podcast website and YouTube channel dedicated to all things official draft FPL. My name is Mitch and I'm your host for another game week preview, going over waiver options, hidden gems and general Premier League chat ahead of game week 34. Just five game weeks left before the close of the 23-24 season. Now is the time to be bold, but remember, bold doesn't always mean changing for the sake of it. Bold just as often could mean keeping faith in somebody that hasn't quite delivered for you so far, so bear that in mind. Still got Chelsea and Everton to play tonight in game week 33. Some huge results at the weekend in 33. Newcastle giving Spurs their annual battering, Palace taking all 3 points at Anfield, and Villa taking all 3 points at the Emirates, leaves City in the driving seat for the title race. Now, for those that have listened for a while, you'll know that I usually leave the selling till right at the end, but I've had a couple of questions this week, which suggests a number of you probably rightly switch off as we get into the closing statements of the podcast, and so miss out on a lot of the spiel I give on our website, draftfc.co.uk. And the most important thing to point out, really, for those that have missed it, is that you can get a one-month free trial if you've never used it before using the code DRAFTFCPOD. All capitalized, one word, Draft FC Pod. If you use that when you sign up, then you'll get a full 1 month free trial, gives you complete unfettered access to everything we've got going on behind the scenes. That's really the best way to sell it to you, is to let you get your hands on it and see how it can benefit you and your draft teams, because you can put more than one team in there as we're approaching the end of the season. That code won't last for very much longer because it won't cover it up to game week 38. So probably this week and next week are going to be the last weeks in which you can take advantage of that 1 month free trial. And after that, you'll simply have to sign up the old fashioned way before the season closes. You'll have heard me mention, if you have listened to me putting on a bit of the sell for the website recently, that if you are signed up come the end of game week 38, or even shortly afterwards, then you'll be able to take advantage of our draft history feature. What that does is it downloads and saves all of the league data that we store at Draft FC. So league analytics, monthly reports, all of your game week matchup data, everything you could really want to look back on next year or the year after, should you want to. I know lots of you will be in some very engaged and long-running draft leagues now. And if you don't have a feature like this, then you're either having to do a lot of DIY track in spreadsheets and screenshots and things in order to look back on that information. Otherwise, it's gone forever. So once the game will update, sort of come June time, and it starts to tick over towards the 24-25 season, any data that we haven't had saved at that point will be gone. Now, we keep some broad general data on trends in terms of draft leagues and draft positions and things. But in terms of your league and the data that matters to you, if you haven't signed up between game week 38 and that point, it will be gone forever. Now, you can lean on us. You can just sign up, literally pay for a single month, get the data saved, and cancel your subscription. Now, obviously, you won't be able to access that data if you've cancelled, but if you did sign up again next year using the same email address, it will still be sat there waiting for you. So that's another thing just to throw out. And I'll say again, you can get a one-month free trial from now using the code DRAFTFCPOD. All one word. Now, I'm recording this on Monday the 15th of April, so any team news, injury developments or press conference info are up to date as of then, and of course subject to change. Some of the players we'll be discussing in this episode include Declan Rice, Michael Olise, Doku, plus many more, so let's get straight into it. So a quick look at Waiver Watch, which are the main players coming in and out in the top 100 draft leagues last week. Players coming in were Reguilón, Thiago Silva, Collins, McBurney, Adingra and Maguire. Rico Lewis was the top waiver worldwide, interestingly, but didn't appear as high in the top 100 list. Perhaps a sign that the City clean sheet was valued appropriately low by the switched on leagues. Jota was also very high on the list for 18 leagues where availability was less of a problem. The players leaving, now you might spot a theme here, Duran, Alex Moreno, Douglas Luiz, Konsa and Diaby. So lots of Villa players making way there as people were backing Arsenal. Now those players in particular didn't come away with massive hauls, but Konsa and Diaby, for example, Konsa certainly would have come away with at least a six-pointer. I can't think exactly what his score was off the top of my head now. But yeah, mass exodus of Villa players around the draft leagues last week. On to the fixtures, which is, again, top of the pops this week. This is the penultimate double game week we have this year. And as we've learned well this season, I think doublers can often be fool's gold when we're searching for FPL points. We have seven teams playing twice this week. Two of them are involved in European ties in midweek, and the other five are hardly what you'd call in-form teams. Everywhere you look this game week, the fixtures look like traps. The standout single game week team are United, who have a home game against Sheffield United. But given the form they're in, can we predict a big result? Can we even predict a clean sheet? Not with any degree of certainty, for sure. Let's have a quick skim through those seven doubler teams. So Arsenal top. Game week looks the best on paper, given the form they're in. Chelsea at home, Wolves away. Should be two positive results. Obviously coming off the back of that really disappointing result at home to Villa, so we'll have to wait and see how they react to that. But the majority of their players, including the fringe guys, are taken in engaged draft leagues, and the chances of you picking up someone that plays 180 minutes is probably going to be tricky, no, and impossible. Bournemouth have Wolves away, Villa away. So it's all right pairing, but you know Bournemouth will probably be underdogs in both of those fixtures with slimmer chances of a clean sheet. The only man you're really going to want to put any money on a return is Dominic Solanke, who is rostered in approximately 99.9% of draft leagues. So doesn't leave you much room to pick him up there, but we will mention one or two of his teammates later on in the episode. Next is Palace. Two home games, Newcastle and West Ham. Probably the best of the rest after Arsenal. Crystal Palace's home form lately has been all right. Three wins from six. Newcastle's away form lately has been all right, though, as well. So it's probably more the West Ham fixture that we're going to fancy Palace to get a result in. West Ham are likely to still be without Bowen for that one, and I think Palace should be favourites. The roster stats for most of the Palace attackers and defenders has jumped up significantly over the last week or two, so even these guys could be hard to come by. Everton have Liverpool at home, Forest at home. Obviously a big derby game and then a relegation six-pointer. Never really know which Everton are going to turn up. And I'm sure a lot of us will be looking at some of their players for this game week because some of their starters are quite easy to come by. And there's also quite a few names where you can be reasonably assured they're going to get close to 180 minutes. So we'll mention one or two of those in this episode too. Across the city to Liverpool, obviously Everton away, Fulham away. And after their loss to Crystal Palace, it's definitely going to change the energy for that Merseyside derby. And Everton may smell blood if Liverpool don't get it right again. And I wonder if Dyche will be tempted to set them up in a 5-4-1, certainly out of possession with Godfrey tucked in on the right and then using Ashley Young on the right side, who can also then push back as a right wing back. Sort of similar to the way Palace set up, though I'd say it was less of a tactical masterclass that saw Palace through and more of a just how not to finish masterclass from the Liverpool attackers. The only players for Liverpool you're only going to, you know, you're realistically going to be able to find are going to be some of their midfielders, none of which massively appealed to me, to be perfectly honest. I had McAllister penciled in to talk about in the main segment and then deleted him again because just didn't really do much for me. Perhaps somebody like Kwanzaa, but again, how much do you want to go and back clean sheets anyway? And especially when they may not play in both games as well. So yeah, I've gone a lot colder on some of the Liverpool players. Sheffield United have United away and then a massive game against Burnley at home. At least they'll see it as a massive game. But to be honest, I don't think if either of the teams win, it's going to massively change their direction towards the championship. And then finally, Wolves, who've got Arsenal at home, Bournemouth at home. Forget the game against Arsenal. Wolves at home to Bournemouth, I feel, is a fixture that we'd probably be eyeing up if it was just a single game week. Wolves' home form is patchy. Three wins and three losses from their last six. Bournemouth definitely struggle away, and with their mounting injuries, should very much be a game in Wolves' favour. particularly as they start to get some of their important players back themselves. Game against Arsenal could just be to add on ones and twos, which is better than nothing with an added chance of a bonus return here and there. The added bonus is then the home game against Luton in game week 35. So any Wolves players that you do pick up will almost certainly be staying in your team in game week 35 as well, which, considering there's a very tight turnaround, I think the turnaround between the end of game week 34 between Brighton and City and the game 35 waiver deadline is about 12 hours. So maybe having a move this week, which is one that you can rely on for the next game, week two, may not be such a bad thing. Now, because of the nature of drafts, obviously a lot of the elite players who are doing well, you know, your Sons, Salahs, KDBs, etc., don't often get a lot of airtime because they're largely taken on draft day. They rarely then leave teams. The only way they're moving around is in a trade. And so being able to then talk about those generally to the masses doesn't hold a lot of value. I think moving forward, I want to try and change that. It's difficult early on in the season because you draft them, you put your chips where you feel the big boys are going to go, and then you have to hold them and see how they do. But towards this end of the season, particularly when a lot of trades are going down and people may, as I said at the beginning, want to start making some bold drops, I think there is some room and there is some value in discussing some of the bigger names. So I'm going to see how I can fit that in moving forward. Two names in particular on the list. One I'm going to talk about now. One I'm actually going to park to the end in the get rid list, which probably tells you the direction of that conversation. The main player to highlight, though, is going to be Bruno Fernandes for United. Now, owners that have struggled on with him, and I know there will be many of you out there, my advice to you now is do not get tempted to trade him away now. Hold on to him for dear life and wring out every drop of FPL points you can from these last six games. The fixtures are good. He's up to 15 attacking returns for the season now, and I'd back him to maybe hit 20 come the end of game week 38. I've got him in certainly one draft team. It's been a long slog this season. He's been very disappointing, which is largely accounted, I think, in part for a few losses earlier on in the year. But if you've got him this far, I think you hold on to him. It would take a lot for someone to tempt him in a trade. So yeah, hang on to him now if you've got him. So let's start having a look at some of the main picks then, starting with the United defence, who I've mentioned already, probably the best of the single game week teams, and possibly a lot better than a lot of those doublers if you were to put them side by side. They've got Sheffield United at home this week, and then follow that up with Burnley at home in game week 35. So again, similar to some of those Everton players, a move you can put in now without having to worry about them for the next tight waiver turnaround. In terms of players that you're going to be able to get, Diogo Dalot is far and away the most popular United defender across global draft leagues for most average-sized leagues, generally not available. Harry Maggs has virtually the same expected attacking returns from almost half the minutes that Dalot's got this year. His ownership in 10-team leagues is 30%, and in 8-team leagues is hidden gem territory at 7%. His main chances naturally come from set pieces, and I was actually surprised to see how poorly United have done from set pieces so far this season. They've only scored 7 from them, which puts them 15th in the Premier League table for goals from set pieces. Both United and their opponent, Sheffield United, are very leaky against set pieces, so it may not take much for the clean sheets to be ruined on either side. But yeah, it just feels like a game where if Maguire was going to nut one in, Sheffield United at home is as good a go as any. If you can't get hold of Maguire, a bit more boring because there's pretty much zero attacking potential is Wan-Bissaka. Ownership is about the same in 10-team leagues at 30% and slightly higher in 8-team leagues at 18%. If you just fancy a way into the clean sheet potential, then he's one worth considering. For Bournemouth, Senesi is back now from injury and always pops up with some little flurries of attacking returns. Ownership across sort of 8 to 12 team leagues is variable, but there will be a lot of leagues out there where he's available. If you've got free choice of all of the Bournemouth defenders, he would be my first choice. Into midfield now, and having a look at Arsenal, who've obviously got a very nice double game week this week, and Declan Rice, who has, staggeringly, I didn't realise how high he'd got on the list, but he's got 130 FPL points so far, 6 goals and 5 assists. 3 goals and 3 assists in his last 7 league starts. You know, this isn't our standard CDM double game week pickup just to try and get 4, 5, 6 points. No, this is a proper pick with a view of getting some attacking returns. especially given Arsenal are really the only team currently, even despite that poor result against Villa, who I think can pull out a 5 or 6 nil, which obviously means then a lot of the supporting cast get involved with the attacking returns, and that's really how Rice has benefited. He's also one of the more likely players to play in both games, not 100% guaranteed, but certainly up there. Ownership in 18 leagues is 67%, so he's available in about a third of them. Any leagues bigger than 8 and ownership is well above 90%, so it's probably not going to be much of an option for you guys. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of trades involving Declan Rice this week. And if you're looking at make weights or looking to target players on an opposing manager's side and they had Rice, trying to incorporate those into the deal would be well worthwhile. Next is Michael Olise for Crystal Palace. Now, I was waiting on team news for their game against Liverpool before I added him to my list to talk about in this episode. And much to my own surprise, he was right in there alongside Eze for the first time under Glasner, just tucked in behind Mateta on the right-hand side. Ownership in 18 leagues is at just 35%, having slowly picked up since the dip, just 28% in game 29. In 10-team leagues, ownership is also fairly moderate at 57%, so just under half availability there. Big upswing last week in those leagues, particularly for top 100 leagues, so managers have already started cottoning onto it, which is probably not surprising given that he'd already made a couple of substitute appearances at that point. I'm surprised they chose the Liverpool game to start him, which I guess in hindsight proves why I'm not a Premier League manager. I felt that Jordan Ayew, although he's obviously fairly limited in what he can do, would give them just a bit more without the ball. But I suppose that's a very old-fashioned Palace approach to games, and why shouldn't they start with their two best attackers against Liverpool? After all, a back five and two sitting mids means they need as many vibes as they can get into that starting 11 up top. Long term, I think they're going to need to upgrade Mateta. He's been all right in the last month or two, but it's definitely where their biggest shortcoming is at the moment. For now, anyway, I actually look forward to watching Palace, which isn't something I've been able to say for a while. And while I've been a bit hesitant and hedging with regards to Olise being picked up recently, I think we go all in on him now for the final few weeks. Next is a player I've been lucky enough to have in my main draft team for about 3 weeks now, which has coincided with a very nice little purple patch from the City winger, and that's Doku. I can imagine he's been a frustrating own if you've had him at points, other points in the season, but I'm quite enjoying my little joyride with him so far. Decent underlying numbers, which oddly don't ever seem to really correlate very well to his output. Even the infamous game where he got 5 attacking returns, his expected goal involvements for that particular match was just 0.5, and the highest he's got for any individual match so far is 0.83, which was the last outing. The pattern for predicting City lineups gets a little bit disrupted this week, as they've got 2 cup games before they play Brighton in the league, which is a week Thursday away now. So anyone that's benched for the Champions League game will probably expect to start with the weekend in the FA Cup semi-final. There's then a bit of a gap. There's a 5-day gap between that Saturday game and the Thursday game against Brighton, which should allow enough rest really to kind of reset things and make predicting that league side a little trickier than usual. I like Doku at the moment, and I think even if he gets half an hour, he can definitely do some damage, particularly against tiring teams later on. So yeah, we'll have to keep an eye. I think for now, I'll probably have him in my predicted lineup for that Premier League game, but that could be tweaked last minute, depending on how the next couple of games go for City. Next is Sarabia. His ownership is just 12% in 18 leagues. Now, he's a bit of a draft Skoda, unassuming, safe, reliable, does the job you want him to do. I expect he'll be a popular addition this week. Good underlying numbers for the past 10 game weeks or so. Don't pick him up if you think he's still on, if you think he's still on penalties. Cunha and He Chang Huang back means either one of those will be on pens. And yeah, if you can't get hold of Cunha or Huang, which is going to be likely, Sarabia is definitely best of the remaining players. Brenton Diaz for Sheffield United. It could be a hat trick now in terms of podcast appearances for Brenton Diaz. His expected goal involvements in the last game was 0.53, 0.55 the game before that without a return. So he's possibly due one. Sheffield United remain very much the poor man's way into the doublers for this week. And I still don't think Diaz is a bad shout, just obviously with a view to dropping him straight away again in 35. And again, I expect he'll be a very popular pickup this week. Up front, Mateta. I don't really need to say much more about Mateta. He's already gone in the majority of engaged draft leagues. He'll mainly come into play as a trade target, most likely, but you'll have to pay a very hefty price for him this week. Didn't get a return against Liverpool, but very much could have done. And yeah, I expect he'll very much should be odds on to get a return at some point during this double. Let's have a look at some hidden gems now. So these are all players with generally less than 10% ownership in average size draft leagues. And let's start with a keeper, because it's always nice to get a goalkeeper into the chat. And that's Dean Henderson for Palace. What performance against Liverpool, obviously helped by a couple of shots that were pinged straight at him, but still, clean sheet at Anfield, particularly given where they are in the season, is massive. Ownership in 18 leagues is staggeringly low at just 7% and only gets up to 34% in 10-team leagues, with a number of leagues still sitting on Johnston, who is out for the entire season now. So not a bad goalkeeper to hang on to until the end, and an excellent goalkeeper to grab, particularly for this week. So if he was available on your waivers, I think you're going to really struggle to not convince yourself he's worth bringing in. In defence, his teammate Daniel Munoz is well in hidden gem territory too, just 3% ownership in 18 leagues. Definitely the most available and safe way into the Palace defence, with a bit of attacking upside. I picked him up last week and of course benched him that predictable clean sheet and six-pointer at Anfield, but we'll see what he does with a starting spot for this coming game week. For Bournemouth, I think after Zabanii, who is obviously he's on their ever-present list this season, he hasn't missed a single minute, and Senesi, who's back now, I've already mentioned, I think Smith is probably one of the safest Bournemouth defenders to pick up. He started at least a dozen games in a row now, while Kerkez, Kelly, Mepham rotate a bit. We've seen Dango Ouattara play at left back a bit. So the only small fly in the ointment is that Aarons is back. He got some minutes off the bench in their last league outing against Man United, so that slightly jeopardises his chances of getting 180 minutes. But if you did want someone who's got a chance of playing both in the double, I think Smith is as good as any of them. Into midfield. Now, this is one to consider for this week, and there are no stats, no eye test info really that supports picking him up. We're relying purely on blind faith that he can try and find or regain that early season form, and that's Everton's Abdoulaye Doucouré. He was an absolute monster in the first half of the season, and since his injury and coming back, he hasn't logged a single attacking return, so he's basically gone half the season now without scoring more than 2 or 3 points. Still the game tonight to go against Chelsea, so if you're listening to this from sort of Monday night, Tuesday onwards, and he's just banged in a hat-trick, then he's obviously firmly back on the radar. But assuming he doesn't, he is still a player I'd fancy, possibly right through to game week 37, even game 38 away at Arsenal. You know, it depends on what the title situation is. That could be a game that Everton can get something from. In 18 leagues, his ownership is down to just 7%. So if you did fancy a punt on him, he is there. They'll say, go as per my lead-in, and the fact that there isn't a huge amount of evidence to point towards bringing him in, if you message me and say, should I drop so-and-so for Doucouré? Should I prioritise Doucouré over so-and-so? The answer is probably going to be no. So this is really just one where if you feel it in your gut, you can add him to your potential waiver list. For Bournemouth, of course, Dango Ouattara, who else? I was going to say he's on my potential waiver list this week, but Draft FC Kieran has gone and picked him up last week, and that will definitely be on the agenda for the next Draft FC board meeting. Pick him up yourselves and then tweet me the hauls next week so I can live vicariously through all of you. And finally, his teammate up front, Enes Unal. A lot, I think, depends on the fitness of Semenyo as to whether Bournemouth are able to keep to their usual system or are forced to change it up a little bit. We saw Unal play just ahead of Solanke towards the end of the United game, Solanke almost sitting in a more number 10 role. And with Sinisterra now injured again, I think there's a good chance we could see Unal and Solanke line up together for the start of the next game. He's a fairly reliable contributor from the bench, or even if he got in the double, you know, one start against Wolves and maybe a sub appearance against Villa, that's not a bad showing from a striker currently rostered in 0.3% of 18 leagues. In my main league, for example, I've ended up stuck with Origi for a few weeks, and I've already penciled in a waiver to bring in Unal instead. Just 139 Premier League minutes and 3 attacking returns. Obviously a very small sample size, but very promising. Who knows? Solanke may even get a rest for one of these games too, and he leads the line from the beginning. Now, the most hidden gem pick this week, we are getting back to the norm. We're getting back to our roots and going for a nice boring pick. Now, some of the names I was looking at were Curtis Jones for Liverpool, Kambwala for Man United, but the one I'm going to go for is Santiago Bueno for Wolves. Dawson sounds like he's still not right, and there was a quote that he may need to have a little op on a groin problem that he's been nursing. So I think we should continue to see Santiago Bueno in the back three. He's a very accessible way into the Wolves defence for pretty much all leagues that want a piece of that Wolves defence. He's now started four of their last five games. The game he didn't play is when they went slightly rogue on the setup. It was kind of a 4-4-2 with Aitnori and Doherty as wingers. So they basically started with six defenders, which was largely due to personal issues. No attacking returns so far, and a whopping cumulative expected goal involvements for the season of 0.01. So he's probably not going to be bagging a brace for the double gaming, but he's just a simple way into a defence with two very good home games coming up, and represents very good waiver value in big leagues. Now, I'm going to continue and pick up on the thread of the elite player chat on my get rid list. Now, I said at the beginning that there was one player being shunted to this list. There's actually three, come to think of it, because the other two I already had on here very much could be included in that elite bracket based on where they were going on draft day, which was very much within the in the top two rounds. So the first one is James Maddison for Spurs. Pre-injury, between game weeks 1 to 11, he had 3 goals and 6 assists. Was involved in pretty much all the good stuff going on, generally passed the eye test, and was a player that you'd want in your team. Since returning from injury in game week 22, he started another 11 games, so about equal sample size, and only has 1 goal and 3 assists in that time, with nothing at all in the last 5. There were times in the Newcastle game just gone where I thought he must be off the pitch getting treatment or something, you know, because he was so far away from the build-up play in midfield that he may as well have just not been there. He's often been criticised for coming too deep to collect the ball, but to my eye anyway, that's what he was doing at times early on in the season when he and Spurs were having a lot of success and he was mixing up a little bit. It seemed like a very conscious tactical ploy for him to remain very high up the pitch, almost as a false nine at times, which meant whenever the ball got turned over, he was 40 yards away from play, or even if we did break through their press, again, he was receiving it with his back to goal right up against their centre-backs, which is not really what he's designed for. You know, Spurs now have 2 weeks off to try and get things right, and I'm thinking Richarlison will get back into the team, providing he's back to 100% fitness. But individually, Maddison just does not look like the Maddison we saw at the beginning of the year. And I haven't really seen any sign of that turning around as we approach the conclusion of the season. Doesn't bode well for him from an England point of view. And if you were looking to try and get rid of him, sort of trade targets along the likes of Hwang, Gibbs-White, Jota would all be ones I would happily take instead of Maddison. But trying to trade him now when they've got a blank game week and then a pretty awful double after that is going to be difficult. Across North London, and the next player on the get rid list is Gabriel Jesus. Now, Arsenal still have a lot of football to play between now and the next game week, but Jesus' place in the team is not what it was early on in the season. I think if everyone is fully fit, I still think he gets into the starting 11, likely more at the expense of Martinelli on the left wing, with Havertz, I'd say, the preferred choice through the middle. He's got an XG for the whole season of 6 and has 4 goals to show for that. I saw a stat earlier today which I can't quite remember, but basically puts him as the least efficient chance taker in the league in terms of, you know, his chances to goals ratio, even worse than like Darwin Nunez, for example. It's really hard to know how to value him. And if you drafted him, you would have paid quite a high draft price for him, probably in the first round. But that was a very long time ago, and it really is time, if you haven't already, to take stock again. And I think you've got to ask yourself, would you rather have Nico Jackson, Rasmus Højlund, Rodrigo Muniz, Cunha, even Mateta? And I think at the moment, given how long we've got left, I probably would do. I think you could definitely shop him around the league. He's still got a bit of a glamour and a sparkle to him, especially if you've got some Arsenal fans too. They may well be willing to take him off your hands. So yeah, I'd be looking right now to see what I could get for him in return. The final player, and the player I was actually insinuating at the beginning, is Ivan Toney, who's now been I think, dropped, although there was some talk about a bit of a niggling injury, I think dropped for the last two games. And I think the reason for that is pretty obvious, is that Brentford are starting to prepare for life without him next season. And I've personally found some of the comments he's made about a move very unprofessional, really, when he's still very much a Brentford player. And I think it just makes sense for him to be benched now. His value in the transfer market is set. We all know who Ivan Toney is. We all know what he can produce. The only way really that can change now would be if he gets injured. So really, his value can only drop financially from a Brentford point of view. Even if he comes out and scores a goal a game between now and the end of the season, is it going to drastically change his asking price? No, it's not. So I think Brentford are rightly saying, well, look, he's definitely going. We definitely need to cash in this summer. Why risk him picking up a nasty knee injury or a back injury or an ankle injury, which could write off 10, 20 million in his value? So, you know, selling him keeps them financially secure. It means they're able to then go out and spend more on the squad. Got Mbeumo back fit. They've got Shade back also fit now. So it's not like they're not without any other options to use instead. They can still field a front three, even throw Mopay into the mix like they did the other day. So, yeah, I think if you've been hanging on to Toney, I would look to trade him away. Or if you've got other options, particularly if you're in slightly smaller leagues, 6, 7, 8 team leagues, where there may be some starting forwards on the in the waiver pile, you could even consider throwing him for a waiver. So that is it for this episode. A reminder that the waivers will be processed on Friday the 19th at the very civilised time of 1:30 in the afternoon UK time. Reason for that is there is no early fixture on Saturday. There are 7 fixtures spread over the weekend, and the remaining 6 games are then spread over Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. And as I mentioned already, that game on Thursday between Brighton and City will probably conclude around 10 p.m. And the waiver deadline before game week 35 will be about 13 hours after that at 11 o'clock the following Friday morning UK time. So a very tight turnaround for that one. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, thanks for lending me your ears. And make sure you click the follow or subscribe button on whichever platform you're listening to so that you don't miss out on any future episodes as they drop. If you've been listening for a while or you like what you've heard on this being your first outing with us, consider giving us a review. That also helps just get the podcast out there to some other listeners who may not have found us otherwise. That's it for now. Best of luck ahead of a big double game week 34. There's going to be lots of movement this week, I'm sure. Make sure you don't get too tunnel visioned with the double game week fixtures. Do pay attention to some of those players with just a single. Hope you get everyone you want. Hope you get the wins and the points to start pouring your way towards top spot if you're not there already. And as always, stay sharp.